So I'm going to start my little time keeper and just say, welcome, welcome again. We're going to wade in the waters of emotion just up to our ankles. And because this is just the beginning of the exploration, and I'll give an overview and a perspective on the subject. Next week, Tuare will talk about wholesome or awakening emotions. And then the following week, seeing their true nature through the lens of the five aggregates and the asavas. And the last week, Jerry will offer ways to practice that both on the cushion and off the cushion, using the investigation and mindfulness to know when they arise and, you know, what to do with them. So today I start with a poem called Earthworms by Lynn Unger. Imagine the only thing that God requires of them is a persistent wriggling, moving forward, passing the earth through the crinkled tube of their bodies in a motion less like chewing than like song. Everything they encounter goes through them, as if sunsets, drugstore clerks, diesel fumes, and sidewalks were to move through our very centers and emerge subtly different for having fed us, looser somehow, more open to the possibility of life. They say the job of angels is to sing to God in serried choirs. But perhaps, but most jobs aren't so glamorous. Mostly the world depends upon the silent chanting underneath our feet. To every grain that enters, welcome. To every parting mote, be blessed. Everything a worm encounters moves through their 5-inch or so long body. Same with us, but the Buddha identifies us as having a fathom-long body. What would it be like for us to allow all the thinking, thoughts, ideas, perceptions, feelings to pass through us and emerge subtly different for having fed us, to become looser and more open to the possibilities of life? So what are emotions? Emotions, as Lindell was pointing out, are natural, normal phenomena existing in all animals. If we're alive, we have them. When we were little, we learned kind of gross categories, happy, sad, mad, fear. And as we grew, we've developed more subtle manifestations, hundreds of them. They belong to the primitive part of the brain, and their signals are based in survival. And of course, we like to look upwards. So in Latin, emotion is emover. The root of the word is motion, literally moving, the E out. So moving out. Gil Fronstall says we can see them as processes or activities of the mind, naturally moving out and on. They're releasable, as Lindell said, because they're not you, they're not me. They're neutral, without flavor, in reality, just a movement. And just like a worm, we can digest them and let them move on. In Thai language, all words, all emotions, all words that denote an emotion have the root heart or jai in them. Like in English, the word heart has a physical reference and a spiritual quality. In Pali, there is no direct translation of the word emotion because Buddhism does not separate emotions from other mental states. So Buddhism is not concerned with getting rid of emotions, but rather to understand which ones lead to suffering, which ones lead to freedom, which ones cause harm to ourselves and others, and which offer kindness, harmlessness to the world. And emotions are so enmeshed, you know, we're swimming in them. They express meaning of the events that happen in our lives, both painful, joyful. They don't impart facts. And as I said, our job isn't to get rid of them, but to see them, call them by their name, hear what they have to say, let them move on without judgment or thinking we shouldn't feel a certain way. But girl, do we love emotions? I really make emotions juicy stuff. For me, especially through songs and remembering just yesterday, really letting it go, singing Alanis Morissette's Isn't It Ironic and You Oughta Know. I can really get into it. Tears come to my eyes with all that energy too. Some of my favorite songs in high school were Sweet Emotion from Aerosmith and Dream On. I was an actor and learned the Meisner technique, which is described as living truthfully in imaginary circumstances. So on stage, I could cry, yell, sing. I fed off my emotions. They guided my life, and some very painful and harmful, and some very joyful. So all day we're bombarded by life, and emotions are the frontline lens we see through. So something happens. The salsa is forgotten in the order. There is an error on the paycheck. Our loved ones yell at us. The car wash scratches the car. I missed a meeting. So how do we feel? What are we going to do? How do we react? Do we have any control? Well, this practice teaches us that we do have control with what we do with emotions. So I've learned I feel my thinking and I don't have to believe my thoughts or act on them. So emotions, two kinds. Fronstahl says we can lump emotions in two big baskets, contraction and non-reactivity. Well, you can guess what the contraction states of mind are, is when we see the world filtered through greed, diversion, hatred, ignorance, craving, reactivity. And then the non-reactive basket are the responses of the heart, like the seven awakening factors, kindness, generosity, love, the 10 paramis. Natural capacities within us. So this is the Dhamma. We're constantly either moving toward or away from suffering and into freedom. We know dependent co-arising that there's always a condition for something else to occur. Nothing is created without the influence of something else. So nothing exists in and of itself. For instance, our senses contact an object of our attention, carries a certain sensation. That sensation leads to liking or not liking. We cling to the pleasant and move away from the unpleasant. And this becomes an uncontrollable habit that leads us through our lives into deeper confusion, especially when we seek pleasure or praise, because the flip side is right there. Pain, blame. But nothing lasts. All conditioned things are impermanent. And all conditioned things exist without a fixed or solid self. So the pain comes when we identify and personalize with our emotions. When we're caught up in our emotions, they carry us away like a flood. Ajahn Suchito uses the flood to describe the pain of being triggered and reactive, and that these floods carry us along when we're not mindful. You know, we get carried away with the craving, sensual pleasures that don't last. We judge or hate ourselves or others. We cling to our views of being right. We identify with the sense of self, that everything is personal, and that these floods aren't necessarily obvious, but that run underneath our thinking, leave us exhausted in despair, kind kind of hard, calcified on our insides. If we don't see them, they just run rampant. You know, they can leave us exhausted. It's like a spell. We're entranced, enmeshed, and we don't know we're being swept away. And life is kind of lived in this abstract. We're isolated. We color things in categories, and we kind of exist without empathy in that way. When we resist emotions or identify with them, we fuel them. And we actually have ways of describing people. He's angry. He's an angry person. Or I'm untrusting. I'm just untrusting. And we think these traits are fixed and real. And sometimes whenever we bump up against that person again, immediately there's fear or that distrust, that mental conditioning is always there. So the practice, as Sayadaw Utanjaniya reminds us, you don't have to, the emotions don't have to go away because underneath they're just natural. So the object of meditation, he says, is to know what the emotions feel like, to know what we're thinking when we're feeling these emotions, to understand their nature and the mind's behavior. So I like to say that, well, I just thought of this, emotions are the boat carrying the sensations, feelings, mental thoughts, and images. So to investigate them, we have to kind of recognize we're in the water. We have to step outside. We have to sit down and meditate and start to see these streams of thought and know that this is not me. This is not myself. This is not mine. And if that allows us, that de-identification allows us to get curious, because we're not really wearing that self-consciousness or that self-judgment. We can offer kindness, wise attention, always keeping a little skepticism to our thoughts. Not believing what I'm thinking, huh, perhaps I'm wrong. And effort to see without judgment and letting just, I like to say, let ourselves be a servant to listening and seeing. The Dalai Lama notes, our job is not necessarily to change our minds, but to follow when a thought arrives, follow what it does. We can be detectives of our thinking. And with irregularity and meditation, regularity of meditation and pausing in the day, we can relax our bodies in the moment. We can stand still and feel those sensations in the body. We can observe what's happening. Fear is here. Anger is here. Worry is here. Or calm is here. Joy is here. Sadness is here. So we explore them. We befriend them because they're not us and they lose that juiciness. And that's okay because something else emerges. This calm, peace, this fulfillment, this equanimous spaciousness. I remember standing in the kitchen with my mom once. There was a trigger. And in that moment, I wanted to defend, attack. But I stood and felt the physical sensations ripple electricity through my body, up and down. And in that pause, I saw the need to be identified, to be recognized, heard, to be right. And there was an urgency to defend myself. But I didn't do anything. I listened and said, I'm just going to be with this. And afterwards, I didn't say anything. And it was in the listening that I found just this open presence that was not reactive. It was full. And I just allowed that urge, feeling to move through me. It was gone. So perhaps I was the worm in that moment, getting out of my own way to take in what was happening and to allow it to pass through, digest, to be released. And, you know, in that, I keep thinking about the worm is actually quite lovely, thinking about what it gives. It leaves this residue of the earth. We can leave this residue of harmlessness and calm, and mindfulness and wise view help us experience this. So difficult emotions, as before, becoming very aware of the sensations and feelings that accompany emotions, instead of looking at the mental images and thoughts, as Linda was pointing out. And Utanjaniya says, if that's too intense, we move to the breath and sound away from the mind. And then so we're not part of the story. We look for something else and then come back to the sensations and the feelings when we can. Checking the attitude underneath these feelings. Are we watching our meditation with judgment, resistance, curiosity? And because when we are in pain with judgment, we're resisting and we're not going to release and allow the exploration to really go to the heart of, you know, the causes of our emotions. So the poem notes, we can welcome every grain, remembering that that irritating grain of the oyster creates the pearl. So we see ourselves, when we see ourselves through the lens of impatience, that's how we learn patience. If we see greed, we learn generosity. If we see ill will in ourselves, that's when we can turn to love and kindness. And as Tuari will talk about, there are wholesome emotions that awaken us. These are capacities that grow inside us through the path of clear seeing, the paramis, the seven factors of awakening, just patience, kindness, and this resolve to know the truth and be, to just ask what is here, not to think to know anything. We don't have to know anything. We really just see our experience and are led through a new jumping off place, that not just the alternatives to hindrances, not like a, okay, I'm feeling bad now, I'm going to be happy now. No, more from an actual orientation that emerges that's different. An actual orientation of our life moves to a direction of goodness and kindness to ourselves and others. So wise attention to this, wise effort, wise view are our constant companions that, again, you know, in the words of Vimalasara, nothing's perfect. Everything is impermanent. Nothing is satisfaction. Nothing is satisfying. And there's, yeah, I already said that. It's not personal. So when we're standing in our emotions, we can sweep the body and listen to feel where, you know, where is that moment landing? And I'll just close with this. I'll just use this example, even though it's kind of silly. It's kind seeing that the body and the heart will remember and incline toward, like the timid spider hiding behind the bathroom mirror. Our hearts only come out when it feels safe, protected, and is offered nutriment. And I think that is something that's really important, that we're looking at what's wholesome and unwholesome. And we carry these essentials within us, like backpackers carry 10 essentials. We carry essentials as well to nourish the heart and mind and move us toward release and freedom. So looking at emotions, maybe I carry, and I'm going to count because I think I listed 10, carry mindfulness, carry the pause and the heart practices of Vimalasara's words, attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance for ourselves and others, always starting here, right here in this fathom long body. And when cultivated, conditions of harmlessness arise. We can also carry, I like to point to humility, humor, faith, curiosity, wise view, because, you know, I don't know, I'm not very funny, and I want to cultivate that. I think that's related to releasing, like letting stuff just go through, digesting our emotions and releasing them into life so that they cause no harm. I believe that's my 25 minutes. So that was a little wade in the water. So thank you for your kind attention. So it's my job now to put you in breakout rooms and as a reflection, maybe, you know, what does this bring up for you? Or I could point more directly to what emotions or mental states do you feel like, you know, are a kind of like your work coming up for you that you'd like to investigate and reflect on, excuse me, and which ones you'd like to cultivate. Or say, you know, what are the essentials you'd like to carry with you? I guess that's kind of saying the same thing over. Carry with you, cultivate. So if that's okay, I will start to put you in breakout rooms. And I believe, you know, because there are only two groups with two, I'll write in the chat the question if you need a little more direction, but I will put you in breakout rooms right now. Enjoy your time together. Just a reminder about these discussions. If you're new, it is an opportunity to, you know, share what's come up for you, but confidentially, whatever is said in the group stays in the group. And that we don't give advice or feedback. It's just deep listening and acknowledgement that we're all in this together. All right. Enjoy.
Susan, I like that you brought up Meisner.
Who can you, you know what? Because we're looking at so many faces.
Janelle.
Can you just say your first name first?
My name is Janelle.
Okay. Oh, hi, Janelle.
Yes. So I did that when I was younger, and it was beautiful. Act before you think.
Oh, my. It took a long time for me to get that.
It's a lot.
I mean, the Meisner technique is very, it's fascinating. Because it does cause you to go inside, and I was not very accessible to myself, and it was hard to find my true feelings, because you really have to pull up a real emotion,
yeah,
and you know, have those mental images in your mind. It's kind of like you the Dharma, but using it forcefully. All in the I don't want to say all in the wrong way, but pulling up all that stuff we're talking about, the mental formations, the mental images, the history, and then applying it in a whole other imaginary circumstance with someone else in the moment. That's real, you know, acting. And that's why we love to see ourselves. Janelle, is that what?
Yeah, it's very freeing, very freeing. It was fantastic. And then when I let go, when I changed my profession, it was kind of a relief because of what you just said. It's very, very intense, but it's very freeing and wonderful. Yeah.
And you don't know where you're going. That's the thing. You're not in control. You're only there to respond to the other person. You can't lie. And that's the Dhamma too, isn't it? What we're pointing to. We're asked to really be naked in life with other people and not to fight and not to run away, which, you know, I love to do.
Yeah.
Ah, thank you. I'm so glad that the Meisner technique was alive for you. Well, this is a time for you to just come out and share what came out of those rooms and any level of divulging without breaking confidence of someone or that personal information. Just it's up for you and what comments you have. Yes, Jessica.
Hi. The spider metaphor was just so powerful for me and others in the group as well. By any chance, would you mind saying it again? I feel like maybe I didn't take in the whole thing and
I
don't want to miss anything there.
Now I have to, yes. And I have that little guy he is alive in my bathroom. I said, it is kind seeing that the body and the heart mind will remember and incline toward, like the timid spider hiding behind the bathroom mirror. Our hearts only come out when it feels safe, protected, and is offered nutriment. And, you know, in the Dhamma, we talk about the nutriment at retreats is seclusion, is, you know, occluding things. We need those conditions for concentration. And so, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
Anyone else? What was up for you? Jean?
Yeah, we the metaphors you used in general resonated for all of us in the group, and we talked a lot about the backpack idea and all these kind of natural qualities that we have within us, but we carry with us where we go, but we kind of forget about them. I don't know if curiosity was one on your list, but I would add that. Because, you know, just reflecting on, even after the fact, if there's been some unskillful interaction, like, what was that about? And what could I access? What quality, you know, next time? But that's a useful metaphor. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And humor, I kind of
and humor
that I don't have humor, but you know I do. Especially like it's more like, oh my God, I'm angry. I'm not that perfect little angel that, you know, somehow that's strive to be laughing at ourselves. Yes, Carol.
So, and this was. Very it's kind of like the conversation then makes me realize how kind of like deep down my reactions to it, particularly expressing emotions. And so I'm looking forward, I believe you said, Jerry's, how to skillfully do this. But for instance, if you wanted to say, well, I hate this negative, positive emotions, but for instance, disappointment, how to express disappointment and have it well received. When in fact it's a disappointment, even with the person, you know, the direct interaction. So there, I think my sense of vulnerability, but also a sense of I don't know. I wouldn't go to the point of saying hostile audience, but how can I best describe an emotion to someone when that person might feel responsible for whatever the emotion I have. So that's the difficulty in kind of breezing by emotions, because how can I, in fact, express them in such a way that I don't feel almost assaulted or something by the reaction. So I'm just saying that's a dilemma that for me at this point. So that's it.
Can I comment?
Sure. Yes. Yes, please.
I just noticed in your offering that you kind of have it already planned out. I just want you to notice that you already think you know that you have to respond. And I think what we're leaning toward is we're leaning a little bit toward not planning so much the way we think things are going to work out, but more just feeling like when this comes up for you, sit with this right now, what you said to me, not now, but another time.
Right.
Feel all that in the body, the sensations, the mental images, feel all of that. And I, who knows what will really happen, or if you even need to, I don't know the situation, but I'm just noticing how you all, yeah, I think I've said it. I hope that maybe offers a different way of.
So I think what you're saying, there's a choice between the first thing is to feel the emotion. And then there's a choice between after feeling the emotion, expressing the emotion and that whole thing. And not to get into the final, maybe the memory of what's happened when I've tried to express an emotion in terms of not feeling the emotion. There's a sequence. I think that
there is, and I think it needs to it happens before, like to sit with it, to investigate your part, and to look at you know, what will cause harm to yourself and others, and just, you know, maybe it's not time to be in that active moment with that situation. So we have 1 minute left, actually. Thank you so much for that vulnerability in your share. Suze's hand is up.
So someone in our group brought up something really important and asked if someone else in the group might ask it for her. And I hope I'm going to say it, what she meant. But sometimes when we have some strong emotions and we use our spiritual practices to kind of understand it, we may not also stand up for ourselves in a situation and like give away our power, because we're kind of only bringing in the spiritual perspective, you know, to kind of like let it be, let it go, don't get all wrapped up in it, don't make a story of it, and then you look back and you were a doormat. So there, and I apologize if I didn't get that right, but there's, you understand the kind of tension that I'm bringing up, Susan? So if you could respond to that.
Oh, this has been my life for the past several months. I am living in a situation with my family, meaning my mother and my stepdad. And this happens a lot. And I've just had to say what I teach children. I've had to say that what I teach children, and that is, I don't feel comfortable. You know, we teach children to identify their emotions and to respond. That hurts me when you do that. I don't feel comfortable coming here right now. Maybe I can come another time that's not so activated. I don't feel safe. I don't know why I don't feel safe right now. It's to really name it and not be afraid of saying it out loud. Because you know what? If we can't be honest and truthful with ourselves, this is not this whole thing. I have to keep coming back to this page in this fathom long body. This is the first page. The feelings, I've heard somebody say, that's gets us in the game. This is the first step, is to be in this life of emotions and to knowing, yeah, what to do with them. So I don't know if that totally aims well at your point, but
I think it's a good opening step. I think it's
good, because
I hope the other person also welcomed it. It makes sense to me. Thank you, Susan.
Yes, we have to kind of wrap it up now, but I encourage a follow-up conversation if you'd like. Thank you, everyone. What a rich conversation.